You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to This Day in History with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, this day in history going back to 1972 for the first visit of a US president to the People's Republic of China. That was Richard Nixon going over to meet his counterpart. And so this happened at a sort of odd period in the 20th century when you had China splitting with the Soviet Union and being drawn towards the United States. Something that in the sort of 1940s would have been seen as really sort of unexpected, given the United States' strong support for the Republic of China.
Yes.
You're jumping in here?
Are we? Me or the
clip? Do you have something to say or no?
No, I'm just agreeing with what you're saying. Oh, carry on.
Thank you. Grace, do you want to agree with what I'm saying?
Not really.
Nanking, capital of China, nervously awaits the Communist Army encamped only 10 miles outside the city. Only Chiang Kai-shek's successor, acting President Lai Chung-yen, and Chu Chang-wei, his chief advisor, remain in the city to represent the government. Their mission is to seek peace with the Communists, acknowledged victors in the 22-year-old civil war. On the Great Yangtze River, which links Nanking with Shanghai, gunboats ferry remnants of the Nationalist Army to defend the capital in case peace talks fail. In the beleaguered city itself, the feeling runs high in favor of unconditional surrender. Troops add to the unbelievable congestion as streets are feverish with people in flight. With the refugee problem now completely out of hand, the Reds are making the most of their victor's spoils and are letting the armistice talks hang fire. Meanwhile, all China anxiously waits for peace.
So who are the Reds, just first
the
off?
The Reds were the Chinese Communist Party led by Mao Zedong,
right,
which we're all aware of.
Yeah.
And so initially he brought China closer to the Soviet Union, as everyone expected. But then there were sort of divisions that emerged. Partly I think it's just because you got two big countries and actually they're going to have their rivalries because they're quite close together. But there were also probably political disagreements over the successor to Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin, Khrushchev, who denounced Stalin in a sort of secret speech that immediately was leaked to the rest of the world.
Joseph Stalin, ruler of a sixth of the earth for 30 years, has been thrown from his pedestal. Colleague of Lenin in the stormy days when the Bolshevik Revolution shook the world, the man who took the mantle of Lenin when he died, Stalin is now officially branded a dictator by his own party through its spokesman, Comrade Khrushchev. The leader who is above criticism, the little father of his people, is convicted 3 years after his death of having ruled by terror. Lenin is said to have warned the party against giving Stalin too much power. Today, when thousands he purged are being declared innocent, when Russia has repaired the destruction of a war he would not foresee, his country must be remembering Lenin's warning. When Stalin died, his body was laid beside that of Lenin in the Red Square. Now Moscow's workers are petitioning to have it removed. But in those days, his colleagues would not dare to speak, for his name was still magic. To Britain, at the moment of Stalin's downfall, comes the man who briefly succeeded him, Georgi Malenkov, heading a delegation of electrical engineers. He visits the Premier, and to a gathering of labor leaders, he says, "We have cleaned up Russia. We have stopped the dictatorship. It cannot come back." The world hopes he will prove to be right.
Was he right?
I won't be drawn on that, but I'll just say that the Soviet system didn't change much after Stalin went. Maybe it was less centralized on one person, but anyway. So another division that emerged between... between China and Russia was over the Vietnam War. Initially, both sides were quite close to the North Vietnamese. However, they were increasingly drawn towards the USSR and away from China.
Spring at home, but unmindful of clock or calendar, the Vietnam struggle goes on.
A Viet Cong ambush of a U.S. Marine Rough Rider truck convoy kills one American leatherneck, wounding four others. Many vehicles were damaged, two destroyed. Elsewhere, South Vietnamese and American troops keep supply lines open while attacking a huge Viet Cong installation. The enemy camp was first pounded by heavy fire from ships and landing boats, providing cover for the assault wave foot soldiers. When the smoke clears, the inevitable roundup of prisoners, many of them seriously wounded. Among the captured, a large group of women, traditionally used by the enemy as ammunition bearers, village infiltrators, and informers. At least 18 VC soldiers were killed in this joint Allied sweep. Battle-weary feet, a soldier's nemesis. The brief pause allows communication with the ever-present field choppers, which pick up both Allied wounded and the captured enemy. Spring at home, but in Vietnam.
That was part one of This Day in History. We'll be back after a little block of ads and perhaps a tune even. Ah, the sweet mystery and poetry of the camera. How does the subtle arrangement of glass, steel, and mirrors come together to produce images of such majesty, such pain? Is it cool to get a selfie stick for my DSLR?
Get the inside word on the world of photography with The Wide Angle, thanks to Nikon. A weekly in-depth chat between 95BFM's resident arts and culture expert Rachel Ashby and her esteemed photographic guests.
The Wide Angle, brought to you by Nikon, Sunday mornings in Art Bank, and with a well-posh extended podcast available at mynikonlife.co.nz.
At this radio station, we do our utmost to abide by the Broadcasting Standards Authority and their rules and guidelines. If you seriously think we've crossed the line on air, give us a call on 309 4831 within 20 working days of the broadcast date and tell us about it. We'll be able to help you out and tell you the procedure if you wish to make a formal complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Fuck knuckles, cock and piss. Balls. Thank you.
Christen the Spirit of 76 taxis to a stop on the runway of the Peking Airport. And Premier Zhou Enlai moves forward to greet the first American president to set foot on Chinese soil. East meets West as a handshake bridges 16,000 miles and 22 years of hostility. There are no welcoming speeches, no formal ceremonies, just a receiving line made up of Communist Party officials and a military band playing the Star Spangled Banner. Ceremonies, brief but diplomatically correct, are quickly over, and the President and Premier are soon on their way. For President Nixon, a sudden change in schedule, a surprise meeting with Mao Zedong, an honor last bestowed during the first day of a state visit on former Premier Nikita Khrushchev. Dr. Henry Kissinger sits in on the talks that are animated, constructive, and frank. At the summit, face to face, two leaders who direct the destiny of one out of three persons on the earth. The gate to friendly contact, says Zhou Enlai, has finally been opened.
And always urgently, the world rolls on. Time passes. 10,000 years are too long. Seize the day. Seize the hour. This is the hour. This is the day.
President Nixon and Premier Joe meet four times for a total of more than 8 hours. We cannot close the gulf between us, the president tells Joe, but we can try to bridge it and continue to talk across it. Highlight of the historic journey, a visit to the Great Wall. Once designed to keep Mongolian warriors from overrunning the frontiers of ancient China, the wall snakes across the countryside for 1,684 miles. A people that can build a wall like this, the president says, certainly have a great past to be proud of. As we look on this wall, Mr. Nixon adds, we do not want walls of any kind between people. Snow falls on Peking as the president's car on the fifth day travels toward the legendary Forbidden City.
As you can probably tell, we're back with This Day in History. Before the break, you heard a clip about China's involvement in the Vietnam War. And in that clip you just heard, what was going on? And what happened between those two clips, in history, that is?
Oh, not in the system, that I think I messed something up and played it during this spot block. So in Vietnam you had the USSR sort of pulling North Vietnam towards it, probably because of the sort of long-standing animosity between the Vietnamese and the Chinese, which goes back thousands of years. It's about the sort of Chinese Empire. And so into that gap moved the United States. Nixon sort of promised a lot of things to do with Vietnam and sort of modernizing Americans' right. foreign relations. And it was sort of a big coup for him, but it came quite surprisingly because Nixon actually had gotten his start in politics during the sort of 1950s McCarthyite period, which was a reaction to the fall of China to communists in the first place, which, oh, this is... And then it was like, oh, this is a big conspiracy. We've got secret communists in the government that intentionally betrayed China to the Reds, and now he's going over to China shaking hands with the Reds.
Right.
But it's just because he's like a cynical, awful politician. Yeah, take that, Richard Nixon.
Big fan.
Not afraid.
Christened the Spirit of 76, taxis to a stop on the runway of the Peking airport. And Premier Zhou Enlai moves forward to greet the first American president to set foot on Chinese soil.
So after Nixon arrived and had his visit, like how did Chinese relations with America like grow from there?
I think they went a bit slow, but once you get into the sort of 80s, 90s, you got the economy opening up, China now being the sort of manufacturing base for the American, you know, empire, financial empire. And it's still obviously a complex relationship. You watch the news now, obviously all the stuff going on with Huawei.
Yeah, there's a discussion about the kind of America. You mentioned like the colonization of like...
It's like Vietnam.
Yeah, of Vietnam before off air. We were talking about... how perhaps the Vietnamese swayed more towards the USSR due to perhaps old colonial ties, and then you were talking about investment after the war in Vietnam by the Russians.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is also the USSR was just a lot further away from Vietnam, so it is less of an immediate threat to them.
Yeah, so in the modern day as well, you talk about this kind of the promise of infrastructure as Nixon supposedly promised, and we see these kind of same conversations being had by both countries still today in areas like the Pacific. Do you think this is just what will continue to happen onwards and onwards past?
Yeah, I think it's just in the nature of big sort of, big sort of quasi-imperial states like China or America. And it's always the way when you want to sort of colonize an area, you start by, you know, oh, we'll build you a bunch of bridges and infrastructure, and then that's, you got your hooks.
Yeah, soft sort of, kind of colonization.
I don't even know if that's particularly soft, but
well, yeah, that's
softer
true.
Than just marching in with a bunch of troops.
Yeah.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.